Good afternoon and welcome to the presentation of Zaha Hadid for the 2007 Thomas Jefferson Medal in Architecture. I am Karen Van Langen. I'm the Dean of the School of Architecture, and so it's a great pleasure to welcome you all here today. Before I introduce Zaha Hadid, I want to say that this year marks the 42nd year of the Thomas Jefferson Foundation Medal in Architecture. It was the first medal that the university founded in 1966, and Mies van der Rohe was the first recipient of that award. And then in the 1980s, we added a law medal, and this year marks the first year of a third medal in leadership in citizenship. And that goes to Alan Greenspan this year, and Anne Marie Slaughter won the Law Medal. So in that context, I think we can see all these medals as part of a larger initiative of very, very thoughtful and innovative people helping to shape really the future of our country. So I'm very, very pleased to be able to introduce Zaha Hadid to you today. And I will take a little bit of time to talk about her past. Born in Baghdad, Iraq, Hadid studied mathematics at the American University of Beirut. In 1972, she moved to London, where she attended the Architectural Association, from which she was awarded the Diploma Prize in 1977. Before forming her own practice in 1980, she was a partner in the Office of Metropolitan Architecture with Rem Koolhaas. In 1983, Miss Hadid earned worldwide attention with her stunning prize-winning entry in Hong Kong's prestigious Peak Design Competition, later to be prominently displayed at the Museum of Art's seminal Deconstructivist Show of 1988. In these years, Hadid began a long period of research and exploration of her ideas. Her stunning drawings and models from this period reveal not only a strong affinity with the Russian constructivist period of art and architecture, but also a deep sensibility for the spirit of the upcoming 21st century. She developed a compositionally adventurous vocabulary that is not only grounded in the logic of urban fabrics, but also draws on models of natural systems, and that taken together suggest a new set of relationships for a new world, a world of complex interconnections and networks. From furniture to buildings to infrastructures, her work describes the speed, information flows, and dynamic interactions that reflect the spirit of our time. We find Hadid's first realized built works in Germany, where she designed housing in Berlin in 1993, the Vitra Fire Station in 1993, and later the Elfhorn Pavilion in Weil am Rhein in 1999. Her first built work in the United States was the Rosenthal Center for Contemporary Art in Cincinnati, completed in 2002 to great critical acclaim. She has designed numerous other museums around the world, and each one brings a unique dimension to both program and place. Using qualities of compression, motion, density, and speed, the Fano Science Center in Wolfsburg, Germany, is an iconic landmark for that city, as well as a place to be in, to be around, to move through, a mixer of all things in motion, a new space of orientation and navigation. Its compressed, undulating ground plane is seamlessly linked to a contiguous urban fabric, demanding us to reconsider our relations to both buildings and landscapes. The museum's sloped interior floors choreograph the events and exhibits in a dreamlike space of flow and discovery, and here the wonder of science comes alive. Other celebrated museum projects include the Mind Zone at the Millennium Dome in London, the Museum in Contemporary Art Museum in Rome, and the museum extension in Copenhagen, both completing construction. Hadid's other well-known build projects demonstrate her exceptional ability to address different typologies and scales of architectural and planning themes. Since speed and flow are so characteristic of her work, it is not surprising that she has designed so many different kinds of transportation-related structures, including the North Terminus and car park in Strasbourg, France, the maritime ferry terminal in Salerno, Italy, the high-speed train station in Naples, Italy, and the Bergisel ski jump in Innsbruck, Austria, and, of course, the recently celebrated BMW plant in Leipzig, Germany. Hadid's ongoing research in urban infrastructures and compositions finds life in the new large-scale projects that she has designed. She completed the master plan for One North in Singapore and is working on a master plan for a portion of Bilbao in Spain and a master plan for the Beijing Soho City in China. She won the competition for the new Maggie Center at Victoria Hospital in Kirkcaldy, Scotland, and is now engaged in a design for the Performing Arts Center in Abu Dhabi, part of a complex of cultural spaces by world-renowned architects for the Arab Emirate. In addition to this impressive body of international work, Ms. Hadid has taught at many institutions internationally, the University of Applied Arts in Vienna, Austria, the University for the Visual Arts in Hamburg, Germany, the Architectural Association in London, Harvard University, where she held the Kenzo Tange Chair, and the University of Illinois in Chicago, where she held the Sullivan Chair, and finally, Yale University, where she is currently the Eero Saarinen Visiting Professor. Hadid is an honorary member of the American Academy of Arts and Letters and a commander of the British Empire. In 2004, she was the first woman to receive the Distinguished Pritzker Prize for Architecture. In 2006, the Guggenheim Museum in New York mounted an expansive retrospective show that spanned the breadth of her illustrious career. It's a great pleasure for me, as Dean of the Architecture School, to introduce to you this year's 2007 Medalist in Architecture, Zaha Hadid.
Thank you very much. This has been a long week for me. Teaching at Yale and lecturing at MIT and then coming here with a bad flight, which I was dreading anyway because it was like these little propeller planes which, you know, tosses about in the air. Despite the amount of time I spent on planes, these flights to Charlottesville are not my favorite. So it was delayed by 5 hours, so I decided to go to D.C. So I've been traveling for 48 hours, and I'm not used to talking in the afternoon too much. I talk to my office, but not to the public, so it's all new things for me here. I'm trying to find my water, which is somewhere hidden. No, I know, I was told it was here. Oh, here, hiding. Oh, thank you. Great. People always ask my office, what does Zaha drink? So Diet Coke and water. So I had like 7 Pepsi Colas and Diet Coke in my room yesterday. And I'm also not used to talking after lunch or dinner. So it's all, I might stop halfway through this lecture. Is it possible to dim the lights? Please. Thank you. It's fine for me, but okay. It's better for the screen when it's dark, but This is okay. I go back to some of the very early work, which, you know, is really part of an urban theme and how we look at urbanity in the last few years. This is the painting of the world, which was on show at the Guggenheim, amongst other things, which showed a kind of the idea of the kind of obviously the bulbousness of the world, displayed on a series of projects which were on show at the A&AU3. It's like operates like a catalog. What is interesting about it, though, is that the idea of the ground, of the multi-ground, became really a theme for a long time in the office and had an impact on the idea of how you deal with various ideas of whether it's porosity or, multiplicity of ground or layering or juxtapositions as a system of operations in terms of how to engage with civic work. The very first project in my fourth year, Milevich Tectonic, the idea of superimposition or juxtaposition, which led to ideas of, let's say, layering, many layers, superimposed. They could be very different from one another, obviously implying non-repetition and implying a kind of really density in the layering system. At the Museum for the 19th Century, as a student project done 30 years ago to date, of the idea of superimposing new structures on existing fabric, the beginning of ideas for complexity, kind of how these layers superimposed could lead to a new kind of life, the idea of the drawing and as an explosion, how space can explode beyond its boundaries, and also the importance of projection as a drawing system and how it informed the work, and also this is a drawing for the Dutch House of Parliament in The Hague. What I think one of the most important drawings, which was the Irish House, using drawing as a kind of like an X-ray, condensing all systems in one layer, and also implying early kind of seamlessness, a technique of drawing, which is kind of the beginning of graphic space. Black on white, and there's when I showed this once in Finland, I arrived and it was upside down, and I kept insisting it's the wrong way up, and they couldn't believe it, and I said, no, but black is heavy, it has to be at the bottom. So I said, in this case, black is light, and it's at the top. And but also, if you connect it back later on to the Strasbourg, car park, there's a connection between that graphic space and this one, so how to kind of really move from drawing to actually building. The idea of the aerial drawing or looking at buildings from different perspectives or the invention of perspectival views, which are no longer one point perspective, but many, multiplicity of views. Like in the Hong Kong Peak, where it's really isometric projections and perspective, but also doing it in the drawing as a storyboard, and also many the layering of the city and the layering of the project and how the product would appear at the top. But the idea is that it could also violate or has an impact on the city. So impact of new structures on the life of the city, kind of early ideas of kind of iconic buildings. The integration with landscape, which I think becomes really the most important of all the projects, started off with the Hong Kong Peak in the sense that, and actually earlier, the idea of carving the ground, and in every case, whether it's the 19th Century Museum or the Parliament in The Hague, the idea of carving or kind of releasing ground which is not usually used for public zones in this project, but also the landscape becomes the project. A grand building is multiplicity of ground. There's a kind of the idea to release new sites, to do them differently, kind of geometrically, the idea of density on one side, randomness on the other side, and also the clustering of towers, also a theme which appears much later in the work, appeared also in here, multiplicity of ground. You can see the way the ground peels up to go up. Again, the drawing as a storyboard, showing the one building which has different aspects on different times of the day and different sightings. So in each case, it has an impact on the surrounding in a different way, or it merges or responds to a larger context. So I think what was very critical in that period is to look at context no longer as only immediate surrounding, but as kind of the context of the city or the context of the world or whatever. And also, again, going back to the idea of the room in the city. That is a theme which also appears many times, the room or rooms in the city, as in Trafalgar Square being a room in the city, relating to the whole street, which is the Mall and Pall Mall, which has very large rooms. They are private because it's mostly clubs, but the idea how to kind of make the city made of these public areas. Looking at kind of two aspects of urbanism, one which is an interior urban space as an interior for a house in London, and how furniture could become like an architecture, and they are located as if in a free space, but they become more than just furniture, they become more like room dividers and so on. And the other one is painting red, London red. Not that we necessarily wanted to become communist, but the idea was to kind of change the color of the city from gray to another color, but also looking at how one can deal with the inner city, how one can look at the new areas of investigation, which was Dockland and Canary Wharf before they were developed in the late 80s into kind of new metropolises, and also dealing with that law and the way they govern these sites that they no longer become suburban. This was at the height of the whole discussion with kind of Leo Creer and the idea that the city should not grow, it should expand into kind of these kind of new urban, but they became suburban spaces. So the pressure not to urbanize became more suburban aspects of development. So the idea of flow, mobile phones, it could be mine, but I don't think so. Mine is always on silence. The only time I put it on general, it comes at the worst moment. So I'm either giving a lecture or I'm at amazing event, it comes on. Any other way, nobody can get through to me because it's always in silence. So it's always sitting next to me. So when it's flashing around, I know somebody's calling me, but most of the time, I don't see it. To save me the embarrassment, since I can't bear. I was once, at the beginning of the whole kind of obsession with mobile phones, I was in Mexico City, where in Latin America, Italy, in the Middle East, there was an early obsession with mobile phones, which was interesting, because existing phone systems were terrible, so mobile phones were much better. So in a electric in Mexico 10 years ago, you know, it rang every second. It was amazing. When you go to Italy 10 years ago, every Italian saying pronto, pronto, but they were carrying fake phones, pretending they were talking to other universes, because I thought, you know, all these people in the streets, they're all saying pronto. I mean, they can't be all, who are they talking to? And then someone told me, well, you know, they're actually fake. That was really great, and that was giving me an insight into Italy early on. And Middle East was another story. They were not fake, they were real, but, you know, because if you went to Greece, there was no socialization anymore. There would be four people sitting there. They couldn't see each other because they smoked so much. And they talked to other people on the phone, not to the group on site. I say this about smoking since I was a heavy smoker. Then I stopped, and people always tease me that I'm a reformed smoker. And I always say, no, I'm not reformed. I know how bad it is. This is not a lecture I'm smoking, but it's bad. So I banned smoking in the office, I was the only one who smoked. I banned it by smoking. They asked me, why did you ban? I said, because there's a girl who's pregnant and you can't smoke. But anyway, it was great because they smoked everywhere else, in the bathroom, in the kitchen, in the corridor, outside, and it made me so awfully sick from smelling the smoke that I stopped. So I'm very grateful to them and grateful to this poor girl who was pregnant. They still smoke in my office. When they see me, they swallow the cigarette. Because they tell me they've stopped. And so I catch them, you know, in odd moments I appear out of nowhere at a time when they did not expect me. I tell these jokes because I used to drive to the office every day before mobile days, in a taxi. And then I loved the taxi so much, I bought a taxi. And just in case. But they always had a hint when I'd be appearing, because suddenly the phones would stop calling them. So that gives them time to tidy up. So anyway, now they have no warning. I'm just going to appear. There are all sorts of stories about, you know, they would put a dustbin in front of the door so that I, you know, be distracted by the rubbish and not shred their drawing, stuff like that. But I think it's a story. Anyway, this was a drawing which was done for the idea kind of really at the time in London that you, how many spaces you can actually invade. And this was like an idea of how to reuse the kind of rooftops in London as a series of kind of other private or public penthouses. A drawing for Berlin for a project. These were all done really for a project for a competition. I mean, looking back, no wonder we didn't win the competition because they didn't understand the drawing. But they were very seminal to the development of the work, and I still think they were, without them, I would not have really kind of made one step after the other. What was interesting is, again, if you can see this drawing, it is not sort of accuracy in terms of the Berlin situation, but if you look at the one drawing was to kind of really carve. So this is a product which is then made of many layers. I go back to this. Layered scheme. Below ground becoming a kind of really commercial and public space. On the ground, the idea that the beams could flow, and there is also to do with the idea of an incomplete composition. And above is a kind of a bent slab which could become more private. So they can have designated different layers in the city. This is, I think, again, Düsseldorf is a very important project in the sense of the first project with Cologne harbor development, where the idea of not dealing with the idea of a generic diagram of a podium and a slab or towers, but to do away with the idea of the podium and replace it by a seamless ground, which could actually also have program. So the combination of landscape and topography and a landmass match with program as a ground configuration actually started with these projects. The Berlin Victoria showing the layers as a kind of freeing the ground in two ways by submerging the program and also flooding the slabs and then flooding the one above. Multiple grounds. Again, ground building. You can see this idea below ground, the ground multiplied by this ramp, the towers above. Cardiff Opera House, the idea of the world which is encompassed in the kind of perimeter of this block which has been broken. So the idea of the kind of inverted necklace where the inside the edge is all the rehearsal rooms and the main performance space, and the idea of the bubble on the ground being a new civic space. So the idea was to carve and to add ground to make these kind of cities, these rooms in the city, and to make civic space. Suspended in space, again, the kind of Opera House where all the rehearsal rooms are suspended above, like a new universe, a music kind of universe. The peeling of the ground, the suspension of a space above. This diagram, when we come back to the Wolfsburg project, is not the same, but it's a similar idea that how to deal with the new topography on the ground, new topography above. There's a tower for a university in Barcelona, which is ongoing. So it's like made of plateaus, which I may show later, with different layers all rotating in different ways. They don't physically rotate, but they swing in different directions. So each one almost aligning to a different kind of geometry on the ground, a different kind of urban space. Kind of porosity. Wolfsburg, which is, again, made of many layers. The below ground, which is mostly parking. The ground and the space, which is for exhibits, is above. But what one does do is a kind of do a mini urbanism on the ground, which is made of these kind of what we call cones. The cones are a series of public rooms, but they're also the structure of the building. So combining civic space with structure. There is no other structure on the ground. There's no columns or pilotis. And then the platform, the plateau, is suspended above with a kind of almost continuous space. The columns, the structure on the edge with a roof supporting the steel roof. So these are the cones on the ground. The gray, these are very big landscape pieces which move towards the station. So the idea that it pulls you from the station towards the building, or you move through the building, the underground of the underneath of the building, or you connect to the bridge which takes you to Otterstadt. The Volkswagen factory is the biggest site, industrial site in Europe, and this is opposite our site. This is not a building for Volkswagen, but this is for the city of Wolfsburg. So these landmass, very large, almost like rocks holding the building, allows you this kind of vignettes or paths underneath, which makes you kind of walk under the building. And the idea that you can spill out from the public programs, whether it's the theater or the restaurant or the shops, onto the ground. So there are two landscapes, the landscape of the rock and the landscape of the ground, which is where you kind of have these kind of ravines or rivers where you move through. And the slab is a waffle slab, the thing which you carve out with the lights are to make the slab lighter, and the edge is the structure. The lighting is on the edge of all the cones. How the cone... And I think what is also very interesting is the whole ideas of kind of fabrication. And in this case, all the formwork for the concrete was milled through computing in a three-dimensional and milled and then poured on site with a new concrete, which is called self-compacting concrete, which is kind of interesting for organic or complex forms. So the idea of the waffle slab kind of hollows then spreads onto the elevation. The idea of lifting a building like the lifting of the Philharmonie in Paris, releasing the ground back to Parc de la Villette. So again, two grounds, bridging, kind of whole site underneath. So allowing the park to filter through the building without it resting on it, but the actual Philharmonie, which is one single room, is above. There's another competition for the opera in Taiwan. The idea of a suspended box allowing two or three public spaces to be connected on the ground in Basel. The structure is a structural cage, so it's kind of suspended, and what we have is that the one in the far distance is one urban space, which exists. The one on this side, on the right, is another space, but they're connected through the lobby of the building. So this building wraps around an existing theater, because and we demolish one part, and then the new theater is also above, so suspended above. And this is kind of white on white, is all white card, but you can see the flow through the lobby connecting two squares together. So the whole of the ground becomes a space for civic use. The structural cage, with the landscape being entrances to the space below. Just to look at these rooms, these spaces connected to kind of increase the public realm, with the room itself being above and with the ground connecting all these spaces. Because now the atrocity is jointed. Many studies about how the room could actually look out to bring in light to a space of performance. And how you go up. So this is the product for Cincinnati, the idea how you can actually, the idea of connecting to the ground and moving through the building and these kind of very linear overlapping stair ramps. The urban carpet with the staircase on it connecting to the street. And the idea that, you know, this is a building in the downtown. The city gave the site to the Contemporary Art Center as a performance space, as an exhibition space. It's not kind of retail, nor is it, you know, commercial. So the idea that you want to kind of bring in people to the interior of the space, and by using the curb as a kind of carpet, you put out the people through the ramps above. So as you emerge from every ramp, you can really see the exhibits immediately. The ramps are never stacked. They're always kind of overlapping constantly as you move through the building. The same goes for the Rome Project, where the spaces, the crevices between all the walls become this kind of linear public and circulation spaces. All the studies about connection, about ground, there's part of the study, the kind of diagram for the project in Singapore, where the idea of the biopolis is not a single building, but a series of buildings which are connected above the ground through these bridges. Again, in Moscow, two buildings sharing some connection, but they are different programs. So you can begin to kind of really lift the urban street or the urban space from the ground through this kind of voids into the building. Interior urbanism, the way this manifests itself also in Wolfsburg, with the ramp originally going into the building, the interior of the interior urban space, the mezzanine which drops closer to the ground could be used for different kind of programs. All the different views from the different cars entrances as you emerge. The very complex kind of sphere structure, again, the structure fans across the kind of trapezoidal shape and is supported on the edges, so it's not a grid. It's a distorted grid. The double cone, which one cone supports the ground or the plateau, and the other cone is the support for the roof. So multi cones, and around it is like kind of a spiral of space. As you move up, there's the shop, so it spirals up to the space above. The main room, or the many layers operating in BMW. The BMW project is made of basically two zones, concrete structure on the two sides, steel on the roof, allowing a very large open workspace. But it's subdivided by these trays, so they're not one single volume, but it's one single space, but it's many different volumes. Also with the conveyor belt above of all the cars moving at the same time. So the idea that all the energies move through the space, and, you know, the blue-collar workers, white-collar workers, but public, all move into the same entrance, and they kind of bifurcate and separate into different facilities. The cars move at the same time from storage and so on. So kind of a light-filled space. This is all possible because of kind of partly because of engineering, but partly because kind of through diagram or organizational diagrams, which allows you to kind of create long space through kind of very long linear lines. The structure which is at the entrance as you walk in, so it's kind of like a canopy, but it supports a very large space above, which is like a mezzanine. So again, using infrastructural engineering for buildings to kind of allow this open space on the ground. The factory on the left will expand, so this building will look as if it's attached to it eventually. Public spaces in the project in Beijing, with the idea that you change the morphology of the diagram to allow for very large public zones on the ground. Taichung, Guggenheim, with all these connections and bridges above the ground connecting the two wings, which could have very different exhibits. An installation in Miami, which I think is not, can't really see it, but some of these interiors of some of these new projects we're working on, like the interiors of the Abu Dhabi Performance Arts Center, the interiors of some of these halls. They're going to roof and the section of the Performance Arts Center in Abu Dhabi where the cutout is an open-air space taking you to the ground, which is all like a courtyard. And that is, you're going to move around the building on the water, and the concert hall is also suspended above. Seeing the different layers and the veins of the building and the section also acting as a part, like paths where you can walk through, but also a structure. So combining, again, structure and movement and entries into all these spaces and the fenestration of the glass in one language. It's kind of, it looks as if it's about to kind of really take off. The master plan of the cultural district was made of kind of one of the museums embedded into the mass, but most of the buildings are what they call as a pearl necklace, where they are strung on the edge. So there's before we knew what was the Guggenheim, the Maritime Museum, and so on. This is the area above. So this is the study for the master plan of the Tai Chung project, where we looked at, so from looking at specific sites, you can also generate generic ideas in other ways. There's a study about, these are four sites which we looked at for the master plan in Tai Chung, which were to locate the civic hall and the administration of the civic administration, two public buildings, the Guggenheim and the opera. And the idea that the space in between is kind of stretched and becomes like a stretched landscape or like a tail. And these are the two projects which we did for the Opera House and the Guggenheim, which all have tails, which would eventually have connected to the civic spaces. The Guggenheim with two wings, openable windows, a kinetic kind of 3D project in the sense that some of the rooms move away, some of the floors move up and down, with the tails which connect them back to other programs, so the connection between civic life and also art and culture, because of their kind of really a proximity, they can also share some of these programs, like the civic hall can share the theater and the Guggenheim, the structure for the roof, which is also transparent, with the bridges which connecting your two wings. Then the idea that you can actually use these connections as more than just bridges, but as a way of actually exhibiting some of the stuff between, you know, so it has a curatorial impact and not only a visual impact. The tail and the building of the two theaters for the opera. So one is kind of white, the other one is kind of black granite or Corian. So also looking at all the topography and landscape, the invention of the new ground, the kind of carve of public space, the way that interiors are organized, so it allows flow, and having kind of many different theaters, miniature ones to big ones, that where it peels up and like leaps into the adjacent sides. These are kind of really recent competitions for a very large project in Kazakhstan, again focusing on the connection between these towers above the ground, so creating a new world on the ground and above. A new project for the Formula One in Bahrain, and the idea kind of to create a master plan there where it's like a podium, and the idea that each of the cars which are in the race will have a permanent home there. On one layer it's kind of like a parking and repairs and so on, and the other one above is where they have the branding, where they can sell the cars or exhibit them. So the IH can invent a grid over the whole terrain, and then other pieces of the master plan. And this is one piece which has all these cutouts to see through the parking and exhibits below, and also seeing like almost like ice floats in the desert of these very large kind of brand pavilions. So each one is slightly different, but they all share the same language of the field. So the idea to always oscillate between an object and to go back to the field as a way of organizing space. This is the hotel, which has very large rooms, suites, where you can watch the race. So it's a kind of almost like interior streets with these large rooms. And this kind of degree of complexity on the ground and to rise. We were always dealing with kind of really seamless ground conditions, and more recently we're doing this quite a few projects, which are towers. And my concern was always how they land on the ground, how they meet the ground. So these are the dancing towers in Dubai. Adjacent to them is the stock exchange and also a very large exhibition space and shopping and so on, with a bridge which connects you back to the land. The dancing towers, each forming to go back to the kind of grand building projects that they, but they, these ones connect, they are not, they look fragmented, but they connect. One connects to one on the ground and the other one connects above. But if you look at them turning around, they always look different. So you can see two connect on the ground, two connect above, sharing, this one sharing the core and also stabilizing infrastructure. So that we have one core which goes up to a certain floor, which is all hotel or housing, and the other one shares the core on the edge with the other one. So the views from to each other and to the outside. The views are between. Views down, so kind of the, again the soccer chain becomes not just a massive building, but almost like a part of the landscape. This kind of details of the stock exchange, of the public space with theaters, the kind of spaghetti of all the bridges as they shoot out into the water, the way they free the ground again with the streets moving underneath. So we go to the fields. The first one of the variety fields was the Rome Contemporary Art Center. And the big decision was how to occupy that site, which was a car factory built in 1904, but then became a barracks, a military barracks, and was very critical how to replace the barracks. So we looked at kind of various ways of organization, whether the new building should be parallel to the main street, how it stretches out to the L-shaped site. One thing began to emerge is this line, which is kind of a diagonal line onto the site, and how that could generate a different kind of confluence of lines which constantly, you know, connect and separate. So it is one project, but it's made of many buildings, with main streams being the main galleries and minor streams being all the bridges which connect them to the existing buildings. The way the flow runs around the site. The idea of these striation or the lines, not only that it will guide you, but they can weigh as kind of louvers on the roof, because it's a predominantly, it's a field project, therefore it's predominantly as a museum lit from above, natural light. Again, the lines cross each other in different layers. The models, the plans, you can see them running around the edge. The top layer, so it's made of not only one layer, but maybe two, three layers of lines or spaces, like an archaeology, always sitting over each other. So one can create one space almost done over many years or a long period of time, but in one go. But it's kind of appropriate for Rome because of the city's quantities, kind of archaeology and geology and so on. The lines on the ground become, again, directional forces, but also becomes a way of hanging walls or suspending walls or resting walls. the sections, the different kind of complex configuration. So when you are in an existing building, you can see this field which constantly separates and congregates with the courtyards in between. The space above was originally the theater, but they weren't as a kind of really the most toplet space. So this is all the complex at the same time. It's in two phases, phase one and two. You see the small bridges which connect to the existing buildings. And they are quite next to each other. They're kind of all compressed next to each other in terms of density. The study of the louvers, the beams which connect the walls. What is interesting also about the walls is because they are long and windy and they cross, by crossing they stabilize structure, so you don't need columns. And for exhibition space, I think it's very critical that they are column-free. These are very early kind of really animations, so they're not very sophisticated. Done almost 9 years ago. And it starts running around. You're standing where I'm standing, you can feel dizzy. So there's the idea that you can actually suspend a lot of this kind of artwork from these rigged, from the louvers or the beams. And then you can jump off. Oops. Can I move to the next thing? Yes, thank you. So I go back to Rome again. These are kind of later models. This very tall space, all the staircases, some of these rooms which are, we did an exhibition there, I think now it must be 5 years ago, where the idea that each of these walls could become one story. So you can have an exhibit which is based on one wall throughout the museum, or they can have different, like a page in a book or a fold-out. So this is phase one. It's on site. This is not part of our site, but it's adjacent to us. Aerial views. Earlier photograph. This was maybe done 6 months ago, more than 6 months ago. I think it was great because it took so long doing the walls, so the concrete work is quite nicely done. So you can see also here the complexity of all these different walls and spaces adjacent to each other. And sometimes you see also the space which steps down. There's one space which dives from 8-10 meters high all the way down with kind of these terraces, with kind of vistas to the outside. So somewhere, when all these kind of spaces which cross, you have these kind of views to the outside of the sky. The sections, just beginning to put all the louvers and the beams. They're all testing the louvers. These are, I think, very nice moments because of the quality of the light on these concrete walls, as they kind of cross and peel off and peel out. Some of them also, again, the early drawings. This is the drawing done for London and was done almost also 20 years ago, maybe less, in the early 90s, so it's almost 20 years, of an analysis of London, how the London is kind of really in the kind of central city, and how the idea was to have to expand London, and the proposal was to expand it towards the east in a series of linear cities and declaring, the Lee Valley as a space of metropolis. This is before they built the Jubilee Line and made Stratford into a major hub, which will be on the also train, the speed train from Paris to London, which now changes to King's Cross and St. Pancras, the idea of the urban linear fields. And actually, there is a program now for the Thames Gateway, which is exactly this, moving towards the east, looking at also systems of organization in Madrid, in terms of fields and how the linear line from the city out to the airport could become like a linear city. The master plans, which are the one for one north for Singapore, which is superimposing one landscape on an existing landscape, allows you two things, not to do a point grid as a master plan, but also to deal with the idea of a topography dealing with very small sites, low sites to very tall building. The soft grid allows the two sides of the site to meet through the middle on this kind of soft grid, which you can also, in terms of, but it's a science hub, so you can have many campuses all merged together, and the campus, you can occupy one field as a kind of company or research facilities. Many studies of the master plan, how you divide these plots, and how, in this case, you deal with the idea of a community of organization as opposed to kind of very large distances, which is like in Singapore, but in this case, that these kind of hubs become, the people become adjacent to each other and use the same coffee shops and stuff like that. This was not designed by us, but we did the outline for this idea of buildings. You can occupy 7-8 buildings or plots to make one headquarters. The idea of the kind of a flow in terms of urban organization for towers in Beijing, and Zarazaro for Bilbao, where we designed the master plan for the whole island, and also the site next to it on the other side of the city. So two adjacent master plans. It's a very simple. It was an interesting thing in the sense that it was a partnership between the city and the owners of the site, so they become one kind of body. The reason that Singapore is interesting is because the government owns all the land, so you can actually, as a master planner, you can make decisions which are, in terms of kind of the height of the public space and stuff like that throughout the site, not just one building. And then we did this competition for Istanbul, which we won, where it's on the Asian side. It's industrial land, and the idea kind of really, Istanbul has very big traffic problems, a lot of tourism, and the idea was to kind of make an area where you can have major fairs or also with living and public buildings, museum and so on the other side of the city, which is on the Asian side, but it's opposite the Princess Islands, which is, means in the summer, those who are resident there, this could become their hub. And it has a very large front line on the sea, but divided from that to the space above was all the railway. And if you submerge the railway or cover it, you have a kind of seamless flow from above to below. Above also connects to the motorway, which takes you now to the Formula One race field. This side, if you went to it, you could not cross from one side to the other because the circulation is always from above to below. So the idea that connect the two sides also in a lateral way through these new streets, then throw a net, and the net allows you to have a grid, which is also a subgrid, which kind of expands and punctures and explodes in different locations. So it could have very different kind of nature of the grid as you move through the side, with kind of almost creases, which allows high rises, like kind of topography. The interpretation of the grid could be kind of a simple soft grid to distort or deformed grids, to like courtyards, which distort a great deal from very small ones, almost like a single family house, to a very large tall building on the same side. So it allows you kind of a side which can have multiplicity of organizational patterns. There could be kind of taller building could become, a mosque or small high-rises next to very tiny houses. minute kiosks or single rooms to tall buildings. And then if you break the perimeter block and begin to connect them differently, you end up with almost like kind of calligraphy on the ground, which allows you kind of long buildings, short buildings, stuff like that. But it's all part of the same patterning device. Very high rises because it becomes like kind of like the hills in Istanbul. This is underway. Again, they have formed an association between the city, which is the owner of the whole site, and also the owners, so they don't have kind of conflict of interest. So it also creates these very large public areas. One of them exists as a very large quarry, which has kind of water in it, but you can actually occupy the hill. And this shows kind of these two extremes, when it's all built up to when it's almost at the beginning, with the kind of also occupying, like the star-shaped building, occupying not the land, but occupying the street. And that's it. Thank you. I'm a bit wiped out, but I can take very few questions if you want. I mean, I think that New York is a special case, but there are also examples in New York where you broke the grid, in like, you know, the Guggenheim, if you think of United Nations. If you look at downtown, there is no reason in the downtown to actually conform to the grid. Or if you look at the shoreline, I think the grid in New York is very interesting, but maybe that what you can do in New York is think about the diagram of the old skyscrapers and how the idea is not about repetitive floors, but actually about the vertical city. You know, I mean, if you look at the Rockefeller Center and all these projects, well, the vertical city has a different, you know, ground implication and allows you kind of really public and civic domain, which could be very exciting. And I think New York was, even in the building done in the 80s, like, you know, City Core and the IBM building, they all have kind of galleries on the ground and stuff. So you can interpret, I think, the idea of the civic life in a different kind of way, in the way maybe you can figure the layering of the towers.
When you have designed these conveyor belts, basically, like the UW plant, how are considerations for noise? And
it's noiseless. There's no noise. Well, the whole idea of kind of really combining the entire workforce next to each other, and there is no hierarchy in the way the top management sits, is that you have adjacency and influence on the production. Because what they do there, they audit every car they make. I think it's every 50 cars or something like that. And they're all next to each other. So they also eat in the same cafeteria. They enter the building in the same way, and then the production goes into the sides, but they meet always inside the building. And what is interesting about the conveyor belts and this idea of kind of many layers, and if I look back at the Peak project where it also had these ramps and so on, people always assume that it would be noisy and smelly, and you don't. Actually, there is no noise, and there is no smell from the space, because it goes back and forth to storage. The car goes from Buddy White to storage, goes to storage, comes back to the paint shop, then goes back. So the cars are always moving, not all the time. They have kind of spurts of, but they move most of the time. But I think what was interesting is because they wanted, well, they didn't dictate where it was, but a very large work in office space. But it is divided because of the trays. So, you know, you have a division, natural division, because of the landscape. And And there are rooms on the sides where you have these idea of the auditing, more than one room, where they test materials and they audit the car. So they can, like, they come together very quickly to view the process. And I think in that sense it works for them. Well, I mean, I think that the source of the work is really started with modernity, but we did away with the idea of the pilote and the idea of the reparative floor plate. And I mean, I can invent words about, you know, the courtyard or whatever, but I mean, it's not about invention of words, but I think there are something else. But I think that, so I don't, you know, I don't think it's one or the other. I mean, the intention was to kind of really look at a new kind of typology and also different organizational patterns, which, for example, instead of thinking about one public space, you think of an archipelago of spaces which are connected, either vertically or linearly, but there are, you know, I know what I'll call them, but it was not really an anti kind of the modernist dogma. It was really beginning there and looking at how one can, because I think that what is interesting at this moment through also technology, you can customize things without being, and have them as a kind of generic form and repetitive without them being kind of really made of repetitive pieces. So you can actually make a one room. I didn't show it today, like the room in Port America, but it was kind of done through the heating process and milling and so on, and the same way we built Wolfsburg, that you can have make the exceptional pieces to start with, actually they could become generic pieces. Yeah, we work with them from the beginning. I mean, they don't really, there is no, there's a seamless process. We don't, like, design it and then we call them. And also, I for a long time worked with Peter Rice, who was a great engineer. And I think even if you're an architect, you're not an engineer, you have to have a sort of common sense about structure. And we with Wolfsburg, we worked with Hanif Kara, who's a very good engineer. And we work with a lot of, with Ari Apps and Vera Huppold. I mean, one thing which is great about London, it has great engineers and that kind of structural consultants. And that relationship has been very exciting and interesting, because through it you could create a different kind of spatial complexity than otherwise. So they took, I mean, like Hanif Kara took a tremendous risk in the Wolfsburg project by, you know, it was very complex doing these kind of very large cones supporting that floor slab with only columns on the edge and stuff like that. So we worked from the first day with them. Thank you.